Hello, friends. This is Michelle Hirschman, and I'm so excited to be here with Paula Bronte today. She was introduced to me by Darcy Meehan, my co-pilot, who unfortunately is not here with us today because her tire blew out. But she had an amazing experience with her that inspired me to bring her onto the show. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce her to all of us. And Paula has served in the healing arts for over 20 years. She believes the love affair with her spirit began in her early teens, shortly after witnessing the sudden death of her father. She was 12 years old at the time. She has a Bachelor of Arts from Brooklyn College, which she received at the young age of 20. It taught her to see beyond the appearance of things, and it served her very well. She studied the Prophet of Khalil Gibran, various meditation techniques, and also Silva with the mind control and much more. Needless to say, she is always seeking and searching. And the search took her into deeply profound experiences and relationships. In 1997, she discovered rapid eye technology, which is what we're going to get into today. I'm so excited. It was during this fourth session with Carol Tuttle as her facilitator that she received a download. She clearly understood that rapid eye was one of the things she came here to do in this life. Within 6 months, she left her six-figure job at Franklin Covey. Oh my gosh, I used to use those calendars. And began a private practice as a master rapid eye technician. It has been her path of joy and expansion ever since. Ah, love your story, Paula.
Thank you, Michelle.
Yes, yes. Well, welcome. Welcome. And we thank also you. Have the lovely Endra here that will probably be asking questions at some point, too. I'm glad she's here. And Brahm, so you've got a lot of audience. So why don't you... I just really want to get into this rapid eye technology and like really understand it. Do you mind just jumping in and sharing with us what this is?
I'm happy to do that. Yeah. Yeah. It's really a very unique process and it's been around for a long time, right? Almost 40 years. And it's not as well known as I would like it to be. That's part of my mission. I'm really wanting people to know about rapid eye. It is a limbic system re-regulator. Essentially, it works with the neural network. What we do is access the storage units, right? We've got those neural pathways, storage units, and they each have their own theme. And so we have neural pathways for abuse or, you know, watching our father get drunk when we were three or, you know, whatever the traumas, whatever the memories, different relationships, we've got all these storage units. And what we do with rapid eye through a real simple movement of the eyes is access those storage units so that they open up and the information just literally releases through the eyes, releases through the body, releases through the field. And that information then is actually not active anymore in that storage unit. And then we put new information in. So essentially what we're doing is identifying patterns that aren't working. Right. And then we release the actual cause. We go to the origin of it through working with the inner child. We do Erikson's child developmental stages. There's six of them. So we go through those stages where the core, right? Even though people say, no, my childhood was great. This didn't happen. You know, we start working on those ages and they realize, right, that the beliefs and the programs and the patterns all started back then, mostly. And so we release them through movement of the eyes and oral input. So I have millions of scripts, right, for any issue, any condition. And so the auditory input tells the brain which storage unit to open. Mm-hmm. And then the blinking of the eyes, it's primarily blinking. Blinking of the eyes will actually empty the storage unit. And so then we bring in new information, put in nicer stuff in the storage unit, and the pattern starts to change. So there's three phases to rapid eye, essentially, right? The first phase is their problem is their reality, right? You know, we all know what it feels like to be a mess, to be in a mess, and to have that really be who we are, or we think that's who we are. So that's stage one. We're dealing with identifying the patterns. Stage two is where we start noticing that there's fewer triggers. It's like, wow, you know, my husband said that thing to me, and usually it would really trigger me. because it sounded just like my father. And I noticed it didn't bother me so much, right? And third stage is where you don't even comprehend that could have been a trigger or was or would be, right? You don't have the projection anymore. So it's pretty fun process to watch people go from, you know, that stage 1 to 3. And I often tell people on their first session, I can't wait for like somewhere around session 6, because you're going to start saying, wow, this is so different. I feel so different. You know, and it's just fun. For me, it's fun. For them, it's some work. All they're doing is moving their eyes, but it's like, wow, sometimes it's a lot of work. Yeah.
Can you talk about that? The moving of the eyes? How are you doing that?
Yeah. So I have my little, I used to like to call it my magic wand. The Rapid Eye Institute says, no, it's not professional enough. You need to call it your eye directing device, right? Mm-hmm. And it just looks like this. And what I'm doing is just literally moving the energy and accessing different parts of the brain, right? So we go through the visual, the auditory, the kinesthetic. And often I begin always with getting that left and right brain balanced, because rapid eye is a stress reducer, right? In order to do that, we really need to get the synapses flowing from the two hemispheres across that corpus callosum. So I begin with lateral eye work. And then we go into a blinking. And it's literally just a flutter blink that looks like that. And, you know, as we go to sleep at night, we do that, our eye movement that puts us into that deeper state. And that's what we're doing through most of it. It's just a flutter. And that flutter is unlocking those storage units along with the auditory input.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is that while you're having them move their eyes, you're also doing some kind of like meditation type, or you... Mm-hmm.
No, it's a verbal script. So it would be, for instance, let's say someone's abandonment, has a big abandonment issue, right? Which in the Erikson's child developmental stages, that begins at birth. Birth is 6 months is where we have that first big abandonment thing, right? So what I'm doing is reading from a script as they're blinking and saying, okay, release abandonment, release never good enough, release nobody's there for me, release all the things that are associated with abandonment. And really, God only knows how they wrote these scripts, because they are so right on. There are so many people that say, how did they know me? It was actually channeled work. A lot of it was, they just got their downloads and these scripts came out so right on. So we do all the releasing, right? And then, you know, we'll stop and bring in positives. And then they're blinking in, you know, I'm loved, I'm safe, I am enough. And we're just exchanging. We're releasing the blocks and we're bringing in the good stuff. And most of it happens while they're blinking and I'm reading from the scripts.
So it sounds like there's a lot of pre-planning before the blinking starts, that you're talking, like that you're kind of taking notes and extrapolating from them what they're wanting to get out of the session. Is that kind of how that works?
You know, Michelle, it's interesting. For me, that's true. My intake, I get an idea of what the issues are, the patterns are, what childhood was like. And there's a protocol. There's a specific protocol. And most of the time I use the protocol, but after doing this for 28 years, you know, if somebody doesn't want to start with birth, we always start with the birth. I've got like 4 or 5 different births, right? Because that's our first trauma. So first we go through a birth and then we run through those child developmental stages. And, but if somebody comes in with a specific issue, like right now I need to have this thing fixed. Mm-hmm. You know, then I jump around. I can do that, you know, because I've done it for so long. I just intuitively know what somebody needs today. Yeah. And I've got all the scripts to choose from. So yeah, I do. Initially, I find out what it is that's going on with them, but I'm not a therapist. So I don't diagnose. I just listen. And then a lot of my work is intuitive. I know where to take them and which scripts to use. And yeah.
So the people that, you are, so I guess, who are the types of people that are attracted to this kind of support?
You know, I've often been asked to find a niche. And to me, anybody that has a brain as a part of their anatomy, you can use rapid eye, right? Because it's just a neurological process. People that have been finding me number of therapists send me their people. And it's mostly right now post-traumatic stress and codependence. I have a lot of post-traumatic stress, codependence, and I have a lot of younger indigos, right? People in their 20s, maybe, you know, early 30s that are coming because they're like we were talking about earlier, you know, their gifts, their senses are just lighting up now. They're really waking up and it's hard to navigate in the way the world is now. So lots of people coming with anxiety.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So anxiety, I'm guessing some depression. What if like, about medical issues?
Yeah. Yeah. They found me. I didn't find them. Yes. Yeah. Because there's chronic illness. There's an amazing facilitator. His name is Scott. He's got a Facebook group called, Scott, the Better Health Guy. And they have some really, really fascinating professionals on there, medical professionals. And we've connected. And so I'm getting quite a few people now that are dealing with Lyme and POTS and all the post-COVID stuff. Hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I, of course, no promises at all about being able to actually do any kind of healing or curing. But what the work does do is help them stay regulated, right? When that nervous system is regulated, it gives the body a better chance to go through the healing process. So it's mostly about keeping them, you know, in more of a stabilized state.
What one of the things that's coming to mind is EMDR. Are you familiar with EMDR?
I am, yeah, yeah. And it's...
What is the difference between what you do and EMDR?
Yeah, it's very different. EMDR is a wonderful tool. And I actually have a couple of therapists that do it. And, you know, they come to see me and they say it's just so different. EMDR, I think, primarily works with the left and right hemispheres. Mm-hmm. And going deeper into the neural pathways is a big part of the difference there.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's like going into different parts of the brain, maybe. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How many sessions do people typically have with you?
I start with a 12 session. The basic protocol is designed as 12 sessions. So we go through the birth and the ages and then all the things that may come in, you know, and then there's another 12 if someone wants to go on and do the chakras. I've got the 12 chakras. So some people do their first 12 and they let it go. But I have to tell you, honestly, Michelle, I found that about 80% of the people, they just love the work and they want to keep going. Because even though we may have addressed what they came in for, there's always other things. And we keep lifing. We keep getting layers in those neural pathways. As storage unit keeps getting filled up with junk even if we don't want it to, right? So it's not unusual for somebody to do 24 sessions. Yeah.
Is it something... like that people are doing weekly, monthly, like once they...
Yeah. When my schedule allows, we do it weekly.
Okay. Do you find that people are using it in adjunct with therapy, like with a traditional talk
often.
Therapy, or they've kind of taken a pause from that and are working with you?
Both. Often they do have a therapist. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not always, and a lot, depending on what they're bringing, because I am noticing these days, you know, if I compare to how it was 20 years ago, the issues are so much more intense. So I often recommend, I've got a number of therapists that I can refer to people, because I often, and they work great together, because the therapy really helps them identify things more deeply than I'm qualified to do in terms of, you know, psychology. And then they can come in and say, okay, you know, I've got this, and I need that, and we can do this, and... Yeah, so it's a wonderful pairing.
And it sounds like, so is it Carol Tuttle? Is that
yeah.
the lady mm-hmm. that developed the Rett model?
No, actually, I mentioned her because when that bio was first written, she was actually kind of big on the circuit. You know, she was pretty well known. She was a rapid eye tech. The woman who developed it, her name is Dr. Renee Johnson. The institute is in Oregon.
Okay. So your inspiration came from this lady. You had a Carol.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about your inspiration and how you got into this?
Yeah, I was, someone had told me, I was working for Stephen Covey, right? So I had all this personal development stuff going on, and somebody mentioned rapid eye technology. And I was like, oh, well, that sounds fun. So I found Carol, and at the time she was doing it home in her basement and writing a book, right? And she really, her career really evolved from there. But maybe my third or fourth session, I have no idea what the session was even about, because I was getting these downloads. And I was just being so clearly told, this is one of those things you came to do. This is your next control. And interestingly enough, for about 3 months, my prayer had been, okay, how do I next serve the light? I knew I was getting done with the job, right? And I was like, okay, how do I next serve the light? Where am I next? You know, where's my next thing? And then I sit down at this session and I get this download. Okay, you asked, here it is. Here's your next thing. And then I went back to my office and knew that I was going to do this like the same day, and just started working on the certification. And I kept asking, okay, you know, open this for me. And just as I was finishing my certification process, a company bought the department I was in, like an outside company bought us, and they had to let go of a manager. I was one of the sales managers. And so guess who volunteered to let go? So I got my severance, I got unemployment, and I just opened my practice, and that was that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that. You've talked about this download. Mm-hmm. I think we could all probably speak to it, but I feel like, can you put words to that, what that means for you, for some of those folks out there that are like, what is this download thing you're talking about?
Yeah. That's interesting. Nobody's ever asked me that. So for me, right, we all may have that experience differently. For me, it's sometimes it's just an inner knowing, almost like a channel was changed, you know, and now I'm watching this show instead. And sometimes it almost feels like someone is speaking to me. Right? Sometimes I'm just like I'm going to give you a little example. A few weeks ago, I was going through a tough time myself, right? And a coach gave me a wonderful question. She said, to ask, you know, whoever it is we speak to, source, whoever we connect to, what do you know that I don't know that if I knew would change everything? So a couple of weeks ago, I started asking myself that question, and I was in a meditation in a process, and I heard, and I'd never heard the term life of light, but I got slapped a little. I heard, you chose a life of light, now act like it. and it was like someone was talking to me inside my head. And so that day when I got the download about Rapid Eye, it was kind of like that, and it was just this overall knowingness. And when we were done with the session, I said to Carol, I think I'm supposed to do this work. She said, I got the same message. Yeah. So I don't know if that answers the question or not, but for me, it's either just a deep knowing, mm-hmm. and or actually hearing inside my head, it's like somebody's talking to me.
That's, I think, super helpful that you hear. It's like an internal voice.
Yes. Yeah. And it's great because not too long ago, we'd have to be careful about who we said, I'm hearing voices, right? And now we say that and most people know what we're talking about because they're doing it too.
Yeah, I know. Rom and I are like laughing. We're in the mental health industry. So yeah, that can be a little confusing for some.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Who are there certain types of people that you are attracting or that you find that this work serves more than others?
I work mostly with women. Mm-hmm. You know, I almost always have two or three men that are, you know, that I'm working with, mm-hmm. but it is mostly women. And often it's people who have done some work, that have some self-awareness, that have either been in therapy or have, you know, done their own inner work, or have been on some kind of a personal development journey, you know, and are really, truly ready to change. You know, some people will come, that doesn't happen anymore, but in the past, if someone came that was just not, kind of resistant, and I came because my wife wanted me to do it, or my husband wanted me to do it, it's just not going to go very far. You know, it will help them, you know, regulate their system, but it's not going to make that permanent change of, patterns, you know. So mostly it is women and they're ready to make the change. You know, they know instinctively that there's more for them, that they didn't come to live in this state of suffering. Yeah. And again, a lot of people coming now have post-traumatic stress.
Do you feel like it works better for someone who, I mean, obviously anybody that comes to you has some level of willingness.
Yes.
But what about the person that's like kind of still questioning? They're like, I don't know, someone recommended you, but I'm open. What do you got?
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I always say, let's do a first session, right? Before you make any commitments, let's do a first session so we can both see how it works for you. And almost always invariably, they love it and they say, yeah, I want to do that 12 sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I honestly can't remember the last time someone just did one session, you know, and was done, didn't want anymore. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you can do everything virtually, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And a big part of Rapid Eye is life skills coaching. So I do a lot of coaching along with my work. Mm-hmm. And we give tools. There are very simple, highly effective tools that you can do between sessions. And the people that really make the greatest advancements, that really change the patterns and create literally a new level of consciousness for themselves, mm-hmm. are the ones that will use the patterns, you know, consistently. They're simple. It's all eye work. It's a lateral eye work. Some of it's tapping. We use eye patching. Are you familiar with eye patching?
Mm-hmm. No.
When you patch the eye, that calms down your system, right? Patch right eye, for instance. Keep both eyes open. And notice after a few minutes if you feel more calm or more agitated. If you're calmer, then that's the one that's going to regulate your nervous system. And it's the easiest one because you don't have to do anything. You just throw the eye patch on and you can watch TV, read, clean the house, do whatever. You just can't drive or use a knife, right? And it starts to regulate the nervous system. And what that's actually doing is when you block the light from whichever eye works for you, right? Because it's not consistent. But when you're blocking the light from the eye that calms you down, what you're doing is blocking the light from the left brain. So it goes to sleep. And the right brain opens and wakes up. And the right brain is the one that's going to bring us into that real state of calm happiness, right? Mm-hmm. So it's pretty simple. Simple stuff, you know, but the people that use them make the biggest changes.
Hmm. Yeah, actually, that was pretty quick for me. Which side is calmed me? My right.
Yeah.
I was far more quicker than the left one. I was already agitated.
Yeah, you can feel it right away. Some people, it takes a few minutes. And some people say they don't feel anything. And like, then that's not the tool for you, you know. Yeah, you know, that's why we give several different ones. So people can pick and choose what really works for them. Yeah.
The word that came to mind, I was trying to find the word that you were talking about regarding the download is clear cognizance, yeah. Because it's like this rapid knowing and you don't quite know what it is. You obviously, you're, you know, everyone speaks to whatever their source is. And maybe even if someone who's agnostic or something, you could still get the download. It's like this just inner voice of knowingness, right? It's like,
yes.
And you're like full yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
that's your cognizance. Uh-huh. Thank you. That's a more professional term than download.
I figured for some of those people in the audience that are in the different stages of development here. Brahm or Indra, do you guys have any questions that have developed yet or comments?
I do. Mm-hmm. It's just circling back to the eye patching. How long would somebody do eye patching for? Like, once you find which eye calms you, what's the?
Yeah, it's a good question. It depends on what feels good for you. You can patch as long as you want.
Like an hour.
Yeah, you can if you want to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a lot of different things you can do with the eye patch. You can also increase IQ because you patch the eye that makes you anxious for 5 minutes or 3 minutes, and then you patch the one that feels good for the same amount of time. Mm-hmm. And you go back and forth, you know, and over, and you can increase time as you go on. And it's great for kids. By the way, all the tools that I give, kids respond just like that, right? Because they don't have all the built up layers. I wanted to say stuff, right? in their brains that we have. So, to eye patch to calm down, you just do it as long as you'd like. And to increase IQ, you switch back and forth. And what that's doing is actually exercising both hemispheres. But you always want to end on the one that feels the best.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful sleeping tool. So, you know, when we try to go to sleep and we have that brain chatter and you just can't quiet yourself, laying there in the dark with the eye patch on the eye that calms you down will put you to sleep. So it's really helpful, you know, and it trains the brain. Sometimes I tell people, if you're not feeling triggered in any way, just wear the patch around the house because it'll help train that left brain to get more quiet and the right brain to be more active.
Yeah. You mentioned indigos. For the listener, can you explain what an indigo is? And then how do you help indigos with anxiety and overwhelm? Is there a specific type of blinking method that you do? Is there like a rhythm? And does it also open, because with indigos, when you explain what they are, does it also open up their intuitive abilities and like kind of strengthen and activate?
Yes. Yes. And I would love, there's so many different ways of explaining what indigo is. I'm wondering, do you have a definition or a way of explaining indigo yourself?
Indigos are just, I find that they're similar to like star seeds or just light beings that are super sensitive, empathetic, and open to intuitive abilities.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and star seeds as well tend to show up here. So yes, yeah, they're highly intuitive and almost too empathic, right? They don't know how to manage that.
Right.
So that's part of, I help them learn how to be more self-contained and not be as sensitive to. And I do the same process with them as I do everyone. However, often, again, you know, when I'm one-on-one with someone, you know what that's like. You're kind of, you know, getting information and having that deeper understanding of what it is they need particularly. And with people that are highly sensitive, often I'll go slower, right? Because they can get overstimulated. But when they come in with that level of anxiety, because they're so tuned into everything that's going on, the first thing I do, and I actually do this with everyone, but particularly those folks, is grounding. In this process, there's a chakra or energy center beneath the feet that gets them connected to the electrical circuitry in the earth, because essentially we're electrical circuit boards, right? And if we're offline, we're not in good shape. So we get plugged into the electricity of the earth, and it brings the whole system into a much deeper state of clarity and centeredness, and do a lot of that work with people that are empathic, because it's almost like a live wire, right? If you've ever seen a live wire, it's trying to plug into everything externally, right? And so what we're doing then is grounding. Instead of grounding to everybody else's stuff, right, which many people have been trained to do, even in childhood, right? When we have trauma, we kind of jump out of our bodies and we end up plugging into other people. So what we do is train the system to plug into your own energy by, first of all, getting deeply grounded.
Mm-hmm. So you also mentioned chakras. Are you clearing emotional memory that are stored in each chakra as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then again, we always, it's one of the things I love about Rapid Eye, is that we don't just release or deal with the negative. Once we clear that space, then we bring in the higher frequency words and the higher concepts so that we are actually imprinting better programs, you know, things that people would prefer.
Gotcha. So cool.
Yeah. I feel like I've talked a lot. Have I talked too much?
No, that's why you're here. If you weren't, that would be problematic.
Okay. All right. Right. True.
We have to talk for you, and that wouldn't go well. But I'm glad you asked the question about the indigo, by the way, Andrea, because I do think a lot of people would not know what that is, and that's, you know, a highly compassionate, sensitive, gifted individual that feels a lot, feels intensely. I think of the reflector in the human design, which we've had someone come on the podcast show. I've interviewed someone who does human design, and reflectors are very, very sensitive. Brahm, do you have any questions?
Not that I had any questions, but I had some thoughts. I always thought indigos were people who were aware of their previous life. But maybe that's a different definition of indigos.
I think some of them are. I think some of them are. What do you think, Indra?
Yeah, indigos are intuitive beings. They're just really in touch with themselves. So typically, they've said that there's like a surge of indigo children that have kind of emerged over the past few years. And a lot of them are aware of their past lives. A lot of children have the memory of previous lives up until the age of 7 or 8. And then when their brain starts to become a little bit more like overstimulated with this world that we're in, this realm, that they start to detach from their previous, their memory, right, of previous lifetimes. So oftentimes that's why children have imaginary friends. That's why they're laughing, you know, like at the corner of the room or staring intently because they're seeing spirit. Or they have like these like vivid memories and talents of like knowing how to do things, memories of people that they see in their surroundings and their family. Like my daughter, for example, when she was like 3, she wanted us to all call her Susan. And she had this British accent, and my daughter's an indigo. And so she had this British accent. She wanted us all to call her Susan. And we're like, who's Susan? She's a teen. Susan treats me like I'm her daughter, like, and I'm the mom. Like, Susan, Susan, Susan. Susan's from London. She's very posh. And lo and behold, I had a reading. We did a past life, and Susan was my mother, and we lived in London, and Carlo, my daughter, was picking up on a past life.
Wow, how fun is that? Don't you love it? Yeah, yeah. And I go ahead.
But it's up until about the age of 7 or 8, and then their brain starts to change, I guess. I don't know what the science is behind it. I only know like the woo part of it. But
it's like a new age concept. It's like it's just happening. More and more conversation about it, and they're more in touch with their super, like they're calling it supernatural.
Right.
Well, what I'm learning currently is in quantum physics, right? Many of us have heard that time isn't linear, that it's all happening right now. So what we're actually calling previous times are not something that's happened in the past, because there is no past, right? It's that because people are so sensitive and intuitive, exactly, they're tapping into other dimensions, for lack of a better word, right? Other experiences that are actually happening right now. And yeah, the younger ages are, yeah, where it happens the most. I had a client once whose daughter would describe, she was 6, and she would describe people, you know, beings, like they were big and tall, and they were wearing like these, you know, remarkable costumes that she would not have any reference for, you know, describing how they almost look like kings and queens, you know, filling the room. And yeah, and then that went away. She didn't see them anymore. And she had, like you said, 7 or 8.
Yeah. Another question, Paula, when you do the rapid eye movement, is it similar to hypnotherapy? Are they able to tap into other, like, past lives or other memories that aren't necessarily for this? Because as you said, like, you know, time doesn't exist, right? It's stacked on top of each other. So we're like fragmented. Are we picking up on different traumas from different, so to speak, lifetimes?
We can. It does happen sometimes. And it's not hypnotherapy. However, what's similar is that we do go down into like theta, you know, or high alpha, or low alpha would be. So we go down into the brainwave that takes place when you're more in hypnosis often. That's what the left and right will often do that, and so does the blinking, right? They go into that deeper state where you do go when you're in, when you're doing hypnosis. And often from those places, the dots start to connect. You know, often it's, most people, it's this lifetime. However, people like the indigos and starseeds, they will remember past lives. Say, oh, now I know why I do that. You know, but often it's this lifetime. It's like, oh, I know why the color yellow, I hate the color yellow. I remember now when I was 3 and my brother locked me in the closet and I was wearing a yellow dress. You know, that kind of, the dots just begin to connect. But yes, I have had people say, you know, just depending on the you know, where they're at in terms of their sensitivity, say, yeah, oh yeah, I just got a lifetime where that happened. Yeah. And those can, sometimes those patterns can be, and I love it when that happens, because those patterns can be sometimes the most difficult to clear when they're, you know, when they've been with us for so long, you know, and so it's great when we can identify it, because then it clears much, much quicker.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting also, you know, and people feel so safe with that uncomfortable, right? Like they, yeah. It's so uncomfortable to them. It just becomes part of them and it's really hard for them to release it. So yeah. If that's the case, how many sessions does it usually take for somebody who's holding on to the comfortable discomfort? How long does it usually take for them to...
That's hard to say because it is so dependent on the individual. And often what we'll do when that's the case is we work on it specifically, right? We blink out the attachment to the familiar. We blink out the, you know, that comfort with the uncomfortable. And when was the first time? I often will always go, when was the first time you felt like this? When was the first time this was a safe place for you? And we go to the, you know, the origin. So it just differs. It depends on how attached they are to it and how much they want to hold on to it.
Yeah.
I could see how powerful, and Brahm, you could probably speak to this too, how powerful this work could be in addition to a psychotherapy, because you could be taught, you know, because then you can leave the session. And if there is that, like, you're still holding on to it, even though it can be released with this extra tool, to talk through that, like what is the relationship with it, and being able to have that collaborative relationship, I think can be really helpful. Because I do think there is this comfort. You get so used to feeling this way, lifting it is almost more uncomfortable, and you do need to kind of flush through that, wouldn't you say, Brahm?
Yeah, thanks for taking me in. Just listening to you, Paula, it's just really interesting how what would I call it? Model of healing, modality is, like the elements are sort of similar to like what I think about in terms of psychotherapy. It's just that it's like a different technique, or it's sort of just shaped in a different way. And, what I do think, like in terms of this versus psychotherapy or in complement to, is that you're giving people access to these things inside of themselves in a way that is easier for them, some people, that is easier for them to work through, right? So like in psychotherapy, sometimes it's a little too confrontational for me to be talking to a client about some of the things that you're helping them work through, because it's another individual. There's all sorts of interpersonal dynamics that can be triggering and anxiety inducing. And you are sort of giving them a space to do it in which it's a little more distanced or spacious or private or whatever you want to call it, right? So that they don't have to, like, it doesn't have to happen between two people.
Yeah.
And there's literally no judgment on that, one being better than the other. It's just that it sounds like you're giving them an alternative if some of these other things are too difficult. And also, yours has a very structured kind of presentation, which I think is really satisfying to people. I think when they when they come to a healing thing, they want to know, like, all right, what's the map look like?
Yeah. And all of that is true about the differences. And what we're actually doing when you actually remove the information from the neural pathway itself, right? It's not, we're not having necessarily a conversation, right? What you're actually doing is going into the neural network and releasing it so that there's movement, right? The therapist that I love working with the most, that sends me so many of his people, especially his post-traumatic stress people, is that he said, you help me with my clients because they actually have movement. Because the stuff that's literally in the neural network that's keeping them stuck is now gone. It's not in there anymore. So as they go in for their therapy, they can actually have some movement. It's not just the same thing. It's not just the constant resistance. Yeah. It's actually, gone from the brain so that the therapist has a chance to actually, help them move forward more easily.
Yeah.
So it is. It's a great compliment. The two methods.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Really interesting. Yeah. I love what you said about Erickson, too, like using those as stages. And because, psychotherapy is so different in a way in that, or I guess it depends on how you do it. But, like, we think about Erickson, but the clients, we don't necessarily talk to them about Erickson, right? But, like, you've made a kind of a pathway through those things, which is very direct and contained. It's really cool.
Yeah, right. We don't have to know how the engine runs. We just have to be able to drive the car, right?
Yeah.
And there's something, if there's time, there's something that occurred to me. I had a kind of a little download, but I'd love to bounce off of you guys the other day around codependence. So it occurred to me that what we discuss now is codependence is simply, simply said, I'm happy if you're happy, right? It's that need. My happiness depends on you. And in my head somewhere, it unraveled all the way back. I mean, to like the beginning of relationship where it was a transactional agreement for survival, right? That we needed each other to survive. And what I found over the years is that anything that really hits that primal survival piece, that's the one that's most important to clear and often that can be the most difficult, right? But that's what it seems to me like codependence is. It's not like I'm happy if you're happy. It's like if you're happy, I'll survive.
Right.
And, yeah. So is that a true thought, would you say? Accurate?
I don't know about truth in any of psychotherapy or any of this.
Right.
And Michelle, maybe you know this too, but in psycho, and maybe you already know this, Paula, but in psychodynamic thinking, right? The idea is that the child is actually worried about its survival, right?
Right.
So it'll have feelings, right? And if the feelings, nonverbal feelings that disturb the parent, they get worried about their survival. So it's like a very early age. So if you're like, when I cry, if my mother gets anxious, I feel like I'm not safe.
Right.
Right. And so you learn that and that becomes codependence. And that's, various versions of that in different times of life. But like, that's like the base one of your parent-child relationship actually is what you're talking about.
Yeah. And speaking of past lives, I did have someone tell me that I've had at least one life as a therapist. And I see it because I know stuff in these sessions. And I'm like, how did I know that? I'm going to say, my therapist just told me that. I was like, I don't know. Anyway, I can't tell you how much I appreciate this. It's so fun. Yeah. Thank you, Michelle, for giving me the time. And thank you, Bram, thank you. And Joe, just I appreciate your assistance. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. It was great. It was really great to hear what you had to say and learn about it.
And if any one of you, well, maybe after the recording, I'll mention this. I'll offer. I was going to offer any. I guess you can edit it. If any one of you would like to try it, I'm happy to give you as a professional courtesy a free session, just so you know what it is, because it is so different.
It's a good bug. Like if you come in live into these, you never know if you can.
That's right. Yeah. Well, commercial for Michelle's thing.
Yeah. I'm reaching out for sure. I want to try this.
Okay, good. I would love it. Yeah.
Follow again for that.